sometimes we're so stuck in our past, right? We think that we are defined by our failings and our faults and our failures, and that message gets looped in our brain over and over again. The thing you have to know, and Kabbalah teaches, is that every failing that we have is an opportunity for growth. Live from London, it's Saturday night. Welcome to Spiritually Hungry. It took me a second to think, where am I and what night is it? We've had a lot of travel. Very excited to start this very powerful month with all of you tonight. Aries is the most powerful month of the year, actually. That's why Aries are usually very self-aware and interested, because they are, in fact, born in a very special, powerful month. So they take that idea all the way home. Kabbalah teaches that this is the month of freedom. Freedom from our ego, freedom to allow our souls to thrive, freedom to become who we want to be. Before we move on into the gifts and the opportunities in this month, let's just stop at the first one, ego. It's such a small word, just three little letters, such a big, big, big word. It's the thing that gets us in trouble the most. Ego is the reason why we have war. It's the reason we have unease. It's the reason we experience pain. Any pain that we experience is rooted and connected to the ego. It's the thing that doesn't allow us to admit that we're wrong when we are. It's the thing that doesn't really want change when we know it's the best thing for us. It shows up in every facet of our lives and every fiber of our beings. And if we don't know that we are in a battle of the ego, then we've already lost the fight. So I think for each of us is to look at what our ego looks like. And more importantly, how we are attached to our ego. So there's me. And me, the real me, the essence, the soul, is the aspect of ourselves that is loving and kind and experiences joy consistently, even in the challenges. And then there's the other, and that is the ego. It's that part of us that feels unhappy and feels sad, really, that really attaches to chaos. I'm going to share a story from my childhood. It's not like the happiest memory, but it was a profound one. And it's interesting. And you look back at life, and I think we can look at our experiences and we can either have them scar us forever or be a source of pain, or we can see it as an opportunity to learn something really profound and deep and true. So I was probably 8 or 9, and actually a little bit, I was 10. And I grew up in Louisiana, in New Orleans, and we would go roller skating every single weekend, every day of the summer. Loved roller skating. We moved to California, and it wasn't as fun. My parents, this one Sunday afternoon, were playing tennis with a couple named Stu and Lasagna. You can take a moment and laugh because it's funny. You know, I challenged her on that in my little 10-year-old self. I was like, that's not really your name. She did not like that. I think that she wanted to match Stu, I guess. And so she wanted to be a food item. I'm not really sure. That was my opinion at the time. So they were playing a tennis match with my parents. And then after the game, I was on roller skates. After an hour of skating by myself, she said, I'll race you. I'll race you to the end of the driveway. It's a long thing at the high school, long driveway. And I bet you I can win. I'll run and you skate. And so I'm up for any challenge. Probably I wouldn't be that stupid now, naive, but I said yes. I won. I was on skates, but then I could not stop in time for the car that was coming on the street. And I was either, I had to force myself to fall or I would be hit by the car. So forced myself to fall at high speed and I hurt my wrist. We go on and we go to dinner with them and my parents. And I kept telling my parents on the whole car ride when they were not with us that my wrist really hurt. And my father was like, no, you're fine. You're fine. You're fine. I'm like, no, it really hurts. I cried. I pleaded. I tried to plead my case, but to no avail. And in the end, we went to the restaurant. I just put my head down and I didn't eat. And that got their attention, which became a theme later in life of how to get attention, I think, which developed into an eating disorder. But that's a different conversation. Anyway, they finally take me to urgent care. My wrist was broken. And I remember when I found that out, I was elated because I felt heard and I felt like, wow, finally somebody's listening to me. The point of the story, there's many lessons. My father was an exceptional person, but he, in his own words, had a very healthy ego. And in that moment, he really wanted to impress this couple. And I was aware of it then as a child. And it was obvious to me, even though I was in pain, right? So this is ego. Ego comes in those ways that are so sneaky that we won't even realize it. We think, no, you're fine. No, that thing I said to you or that thing I did, that didn't really hurt you. You'll be okay. This is the way that ego has a stranglehold over all of us. And if you want to know in your own life how much ego is in control, think about this. In this day, how much of this day were you feeling happy? And I want to actually say joyful because happiness is fleeting. You know, you can be happy and then you're sad and then you chase the next thing that's going to make you happy. So happiness for me is not really as important. Joy is that you maintain a state no matter what is happening, how challenging it is, you're able to hold that state of being. So think about it. Were you happy or joyful 100% of today? Who was? Nobody. Exactly. At least we're honest. Okay. 80%. A few. They see a happy person there in the corner. 50%. Right? And then the numbers keep going down. In truth, and this is, there's no shame in this. It's just to see again how much ego is in charge. If we were happy 100% of the time, we don't have ego. And if we don't have ego, basically we're not alive. So that's okay that you didn't have 100%. But those of us who had 20% of joy today, so ego is in the driver's seat because ego told you to be upset about X, Y, Z, wake up grumpy because yesterday something happened or a week ago or still from our childhood, we're marred by something that shouldn't have happened that did. This is what we're talking about today. And the opportunity in the month of Aries, we're entering the first 12 days of Aries, which are so powerful. And that's why we talk about Rosh Hashanah as the head of the year. That gives you the quantity of your days. This month of Aries really gives you the quality of your days, of your life. Because in each day, so today is Aries, it's the energy of Aries. But more importantly, if you write down your intention for this day, which will be that month, you dictate what your life will look like. And then it's after that Taurus, then Gemini, and so on and so forth. So if you take the next 12 days and decide who you want to be, how you want to live, then you're going to change the entire year. And more importantly, it's your becoming. It's who you're going to be. Remember my oldest son a while ago, when he started to kind of get out of the fog of puberty and like realizing like things actually matter that you do, he said, life is too short not to do the right thing, right? We always talk about not doing the wrong thing. But I think that that's what's so beautiful about Kabbalah. We have all this information. We know this is a powerful month. And in it, the Creator told the Israelites, this is the month that I give over control to you. It means that we can control what's going to happen for the rest of the year. Who wants that? I want that. It starts with these first 12 days, with being conscious about, again, where your ego has a stranglehold over you, how much it's in the driver's seat, and you deciding who you want to become in this month.
So before I share anything about the month of Aries, I want to share one of my favorite stories within Aries, which I think illustrates a little bit about the month and about the sign, old present, especially Marcus, but old present, Aries excluded. So I was meeting once with somebody who was born under the sign of Aries, and he goes on for about a half hour, 45 minutes, about himself. After about 45 minutes, he stops and says, you know what, I realize I just spent 45 minutes just speaking about myself. Can you take the next 45 minutes and say what you think about me? So that's the sharing of the Aries. That being said, as Monica said, it's probably because it is such a powerful month that I want to really underscore, first of all, why we're here this evening. Yes, there's going to be wisdom. I'm going to share some information that it can hopefully be helpful for all of us in the next month. But really, this day, beginning tonight into tomorrow, is one of the most impactful and powerful days of the year. How our consciousness is tonight into tomorrow, the next 24 hours, as Monica said, it continues for the next 12 days. But this is the seed. This is the seed not just for the next month. This is the seed for the next 12 months. So where our consciousness is tonight, what we're thinking about, what we're focused on, what we desire, will impact the whole next 12 months. And yes, as we said, we're going to share some wisdom and consciousness we want to have, but really the fact that we're getting together, and this is really the power and the beauty of a spiritual community. As Monica mentioned, we've kind of been on a whirlwind the past few weeks and months. We've been in the Mexico Spiritually Hungry Retreat, the Rome Spiritually Hungry Retreat, and now we're in London. But the beauty of having communities all over the world is that you can come together with the same consciousness and the same desire. And my next 12 months and each one of your next 12 months is going to be that much more powerful, not only because of any wisdom and consciousness you change and use, but because of the fact that we came together to draw down the great light. So even before I begin to share any information, I want us all to take a moment to appreciate the energy that we are able to connect to together here tonight. It's very powerful, very important. And I want to thank every single one of you for making this evening more powerful for me, as you do for everybody else here. One of the most important, one of the most powerful, one of the most impactful days of the year. So clearly, we want to get our consciousness right. The Kabbalists speak about this month as being the month of renewal. We know as we in the cycle of the year, we're in spring. In spring, you know, sometimes people think, well, maybe the Kabbalists got that idea because if you go out into nature, things are beginning to grow anew. But in reality, the reason why we know that the spiritual reason always precedes the physical manifestation. The reason why everything begins to grow and sprout now is because that's the energy in the world. So, and I know that in Battersea Park, for instance, there's beautiful cherry blossoms that people are going to see. And all over this city and everywhere you are, certainly if you're more in nature, you see things are beginning to grow anew. That is not the cause, that is the effect. That is the effect of the energy that is available, not just to the trees and vegetation, it's available to me and to you. So what this month, and certainly this evening, has the ability to do is to create a whole new you. That's the energy. That's why Aries is so important. That's why this day is so important, because that energy is flowing down. The trees, who are more spiritual than we are, and vegetation that is more spiritual, more connected than most of us usually are, takes full advantage of that. And even things that were dead and dormant now become back to life. But that's only a small version of what's available to us in this month. So we begin the consciousness of this month knowing that we can and are meant to become completely new. Now, if you're studying Kabbalah, if you're here this evening, I'm assuming that that's something you want. I know, by the way, I've met many people, and they frankly scare me, who don't want things to change. There's people who like things as they are, although in reality, of course, things never remain as they are, but there are people who are not chasing change. And I want to speak about, for a moment, about the importance of desiring change right now. We're all living, to one degree or another, good lives, successful lives. But maybe the most important understanding that one gains in studying spirituality and studying Kabbalah, and we share this for those of you who were with us earlier today, that what potential that resides within me and within each one of us, the potential for blessings, for light, for happiness, is so much greater, so far from who we are today, even though we're a good version. We're not a bad version, we're a good version. But compared to what we can be, compared to what we are meant to be, we're not even close. And if you have that understanding, then you truly want change. Change not from bad to good, from good to unbelievable. That's the purpose of Kabbalah. That's the purpose of the spiritual work and the spiritual study. So when we talk about renewal, we must be talking about change. And when we talk about change, we have to be talking about, sometimes people don't like this word, but a desperate need for change. You know, I can ask myself, you know, I do a lot of good things with my life. I share, I teach. How much do I need to change? I know for myself, and I want all of us hopefully to be awakened to this, that this version of me, great, beautiful, powerful, compared to who I'm supposed to be, very far. And the reason it's important to have that realization tonight is because we know that the light of the Creator does not give things that we would like to have. You know, Rav Ashlag, the founder of the center, uses the example If a man on the street, a poor man on the street comes up to you and says, you know, can I please have £5 for a meal? You're likely, hopefully, to give it to him if you really believe he really needs it. He's not buying, you know, alcohol. But if somebody comes up from the street and says, you know, I really would like to buy a new Ferrari. Give me some money. You're not going to give him a penny, right? Because he doesn't really need that, but he'd like to have it. Our relationship with the light of the Creator is exactly the same. Any true and maybe desperate, but true and powerful desire that we have, the light of the Creator will fulfill for us. Anything we'd like to have, we're not going to get. So as we are opening up our consciousness to the power of this evening and to the power of this month, and as we said, it's renewal, we can draw and experience renewal in all areas of our lives, in our relationships, in our work, in our spiritual connection, in our joy. But in order to truly draw from the fountain of renewal that is flowing down into this world even more than the trees are taking and using, we have to desire change. And we actually have to be desperate for that change. If we are to connect this evening and really awaken our consciousness, it means that we leave this connection together, this time together, with a true and powerful desire to change. That's the only way, as we call in Kabbalah, the vessel. That is the only vessel into which an overflow of light, of blessings for renewal and for change can become ours this evening, into this month, and into the next 12 months. So clearly a very powerful moment, but it necessitates the right consciousness. We understand that right now in this moment, there is great light of renewal showering down into our world. And we desire to bring that light of renewal into every part of our lives. And we know that that will necessitate change, and we desperately want that change. And if you awaken that consciousness, I can tell you from practice, you will see a difference, not just in this evening, into tomorrow, in the next month, in the next 12 months.
So when we think about change, which is one of my most exciting topics, I did not come in the world like that. I hated change like most people, loathe change. We desire change, we crave it, but in actuality, it's hard, it's uncomfortable. And we know we're going to have to do something we don't really want to do for something that we ultimately want. And it's that battle, ego usually wins in that. And then we succumb to that and we don't really ultimately change. We talk about taking control of this month. We talked about ego. We talked about change. But sometimes we're so stuck in our past, right? We think that we are defined by our failings and our faults and our failures. And that message gets looped in our brain over and over again. The thing you have to know, and Kabbalah teaches, is that every failing that we have is an opportunity for growth. Every falling that we have is also an opportunity for elevation. There is light in every single failure and falling, but it's in a shell. And the only way that you crack that shell is if you understand it and you ask yourself, what is it that I want from life and what do I want to experience? To do that, the first thing is to look at nature. If you look at nature, we all have one, right? It's usually defined by either our past incarnations that we come into the world with, the house we grew up in, the upbringing we had, what we were taught, where we lived, and our current situation, the life that we have now. All of that creates and cultivates our nature. And the nature that we have feeds the negative things that we do. It pushes us to make those poor choices, but it also feeds the positive. And it doesn't matter if your nature that you have, that you want to change, is not only for negative, but it's also to make sure you don't stay stuck in even the positive attributes you have. So stay with me, because when we talk about nature, we're like, oh, I know in Kabbalah, change my Aries nature or my Virgo nature. I have to change this aspect of my being and to become more sharing. But even if you're a sharing, generous, giving person, beautiful. But if that's where you are and that's your comfort zone and that's where you are every day, you're going to miss the reason you came to this world. So your nature, even in the positive you're doing, you're meant to go above and beyond that. We're meant to explore, to expand our vessel, stretch our consciousness. And that only happens when you understand whatever you are experiencing is meant to be something different, greater, bigger, even in the good things that you do day to day. And that's not how we look at things. We think, oh, the failure that I had, the falling that I had, that was bad. I'm changing that aspect of my nature. But this other part of my nature that's good, that's great. I'm happy with that. No. Especially in these 12 days, even the good that you do, think about how you can do it differently. I keep talking about this with my friends because I was shocked. I mean, everybody's heard this ism, blood is thicker than water, right? Everybody's heard that, right? Do you know that's not the whole saying of that idea? Did you know that? Who knows the full thing? Right, nobody. Blood is thicker than the water of the womb, is what the original saying was. Which means the blood that you choose, the friendships, the family that you cultivate by choice is thicker than the water of the womb, which is family, which is the opposite of how we understand it today. And I'm bringing that up because in nature, we think, oh, you know, this is the family I was born into. This is just part of my nature. This is my reality. I'm going to give to the people that expect me to give. I'm going to be less generous with others I don't know because I have so much responsibility to support in this way. If you look at this, it's going to change the way you really live your life and how you experience yourself. And I want to give you an example. Everybody knows Tiger Woods. We know a lot about him. I'll start in 2008. It was a watermark part of his career where he ended up, I'm not going to use all the verbiage. I'm not a golfer like you, but whatever, he won. But he had, his leg was broken in two places. He had a torn ALC. He didn't know that also his joint and his knee was completely removed. After he won, it was a really interesting match, apparently, right? In Torrey Pines, San Diego. After he won, he went into emergency knee surgery. And it took 6 months to recuperate. And at that same time, all of these things about his personal life came to surface. It's very scandalous. I'm not going to go into details of it. Really, really salacious information. And from that point, he fell for a period of time. But if we look at his story, it didn't start there. The seeds for this evolution or where he went was sown early on because he was able to handle crazy pressure, extreme situations with excellence. But in his spiritual life, that's where the demons took charge. His father's name was Earl Woods. And he went off to war. He had a family, three kids, a wife. He came back after the war with a new wife, never told the family anything. And then Tiger was born. And it said in those first months, 9 months, he really didn't pay attention to Tiger, but he was putting him in his high chair and he would play golf in the garage and Tiger would watch that. And the legend is that at 9 months, he crawled out of the high chair and started to get curious about golf. At 3 years old, he was beating 10-year-old players. When he was 11 years old, he was beating his father at an 18 round of golf. When he was in seventh grade, he was invited to Stanford. And he talks about, and this is all out there, that as he got older, his father treated him like this was a war, right? Like it was a battle. And he would try to distract him with noise and yelling at him, different obscenities to get his attention, to make sure that he wouldn't be distracted when he was playing the game. And it got to the point where it was abusive. And they came up with a code word. If it ever got too much, imagine this is his father, right? If it got too much, he would use the word enough. But they also decided that that word was for losers. It was a word never to be used. But if they used it, that's when he knew he had his fair share of, I call it abuse, basically, but you can call it whatever, boot camp. So they raised a prince, but they raised a prisoner. And he went through his life with accomplishments. And the more that he accomplished, the less free he felt, the less happy he was. He couldn't sleep without medicating himself. And he went to all kinds of different extremes and he was successful in this one area, but he had spiritual malady. He was consumed by the demons of his spirit. And so if you think about this, the question really for all of us is not to demonize anybody, right? Let's look at him as an example because he had his falling and then he had his evolution. But if we look at him, we have to ask ourselves, what is it that we're doing with our soul? We can go after our goals and go after accomplishments and even achievements, but not at the cost of our soul. Marcus Aurelius would ask himself the question every day, what am I doing with my soul? So I ask you, what are we doing? What are you doing with your soul? Is your soul acting childish? Is it a tyrant? Is it a bully? Where are we putting energy in this aspect of ourselves? Because if we don't think about it, life just happens to us and not through us. And again, in these 12 days, I think it's such an opportunity, and that's the beauty of Kabbalah, to really look and say, okay, who do I want to be? How do I want my soul to express itself in this world? And what steps am I going to take to manifest that? Because you have the ability to do that. You obviously have the desire because you're here. And don't doubt that in all the things, we're so amazing as humans. We can do anything we put our minds to. We truly, truly can. We get in our way very often. But I think in the next 12 days, if you just write down what you want your soul to express in the world and be very specific in each day what you want that to be, the rest of the year will be in a way that you cannot, have not experienced until now.
So Monica mentions the idea of the battle, which is, for me, maybe one of the most powerful ways that the wisdom of Kabbalah is different than other spiritual paths. You know, today more maybe than ever in human history, people are studying spirituality and using its tools, but for what purpose? And I think it's an important question for all of us. Why do we pursue spiritual study, practice? Usually it's to make what is better. Person might have a pain point, you, he or she, or even wants to make things in some areas of life better. So we open up to spirituality, we study, and we use the tools. That's beautiful, and it's helpful very often to so many people. But that's not really the point. We spoke before about the fact that our potential is so much greater than who we are right now. And that really this time of the year is how do I begin to unlock that unbelievable potential? And there's only one way to do that. There's only one way to do that, and that is through battle. And battle, again, is not a word we usually associate with or even like to think about or associate with spirituality, but it's the true purpose of spirituality. Each one of us was born with, on the one hand, unbelievable potential. And there are guards around that potential. The guards around that potential are our nature. And we can spend an entire life, even being a very spiritual person and studying and practicing, but never unlocking our true blessings, our true power, our true abilities. Because we'd rather not battle. We'd rather be good people and spiritual people and shy away from the battle. But if you know, and this is maybe the most important consciousness that'll give us the impetus to want to battle and battle every day, is the fact that we need to know that it is behind the walls of those battles, big and small, that our true light and our true blessings exist. So I can be a good person and a spiritual person, but if I'm not battling every single day, then I am not on the journey towards revealing my true unlimited potential. The Kabbalists teach, they say that every single day before we wake up, the forces that are trying to hide even from ourselves who we are and what we can do are prepared. And where will you find them? Where are they guarding? In those times, those places, the situations that we choose not to battle. And what that means, if you understand it, if we understand that, yes, it is true, we have limitless potential. And yes, it is true, we came into this world to be so much greater and reveal so much more light and blessings than we're currently doing. But the only way a person can meditate all day and all night, a person can even do actions of sharing all day and all night, person can pray all day and all night, he or she will never be able to unlock the unlimited blessings that they have. The only way to unlock the true blessings and potential that we have is to battle. And what does battle mean? The Kabbalists use an example. Let's just, you know, we those of us who have children, you know that you try to do everything you can to help them. But every once in a while, you know, depending on how busy you are and how much other stress you have, There'll be that one moment once a week where, like, they need your help, but it's just too much for you. I shared with them. I gave them so much time and energy the past week. This is the moment. Too much. But we have to now reframe it and understand the rest of the week when it was easy for us and we enjoyed it so much, that wasn't a battle. How much light did I give my children in those 7 days or 6 days that I was so excited and it was easy for me? I gave them some light. Not that much. That one day when I'm just too overwhelmed, that I have no desire, and it should be a real battle for me to share with them, then that's, if I do that, and if I choose to battle and do that, that will unlock an unbelievable amount of light for them and for me. And this is true about our relationship with friends. It's certainly true about our, you know, those of us who are in relationships, right? There are times, you know, maybe when you're on vacation and your husband, your wife, your spouse, your partner asks you to do something. Yeah, of course. Everything's going great. Anything you want. Yeah, hours. Let's do everything you want, you know, right? And then there's that one day when you come home from work and it was a very stressful day and your partner, your spouse needs you. Not today. Look, we spent a week on vacation. I did everything you wanted, right? I was so magnanimous.
That's not a personal story.
No, really, not joking.
I'm making us look bad.
Oh, no. I'm using an example, right? And you don't, but not now. The day was too stressful. It was too much. Not now, tomorrow. And this is not an easy mindset to shift. Because if you do this, you really change your entire view on the challenging times, the times that you don't want in life. Out of the 24 hours in a day, the real unlocking of light and blessings and power and potential is in the moments you don't want. It's true in the day, it's true in the week, it's true in the month, it's true in the year, it's true in the life. So the mindset, when we talk about renewal, who's the new person I want to become tonight, tomorrow, this next month, this next 12 months? I want to become somebody who knows that in order to unlock the great blessings that I am meant to experience, I need to find the battle. And I get excited about the battle because I know that that's why I'm here. That's where the light is. That's where the blessing is. So rather than letting ourselves think we're, and again, we are good people, spiritual people. But that's not why we're here. We're here to unlock unlimited blessings, unlimited potential. That only will be those moments of battle. So rather than even coming upon a battle, what I would strongly recommend for the next 24 hours, at least as Monica said, the next 12 days, look for the battle. Don't just, maybe before when it would come, you would shy away from it. Don't just grab the opportunities for battle that will come into your life for the next 12 days, but actually try to find the battle. Wake up in the morning and say, what is the one thing that I don't want to do today? Assuming it's a good thing, right? Assuming it's something that's an action of sharing, something that's positive, right? What is the one thing I don't want to do? And let me battle and do it. I'll do all the other things that I want to do, but what am I going to be most excited about? That one thing that I really don't want to do, because I know that in that battle, I unlock the true light and the true blessings. So the person we want to become, the renewed person we want to become this evening and tomorrow, is a person who not only fights the battles or jumps on the battle when they come to us, but we become somebody who wakes up every morning and says, I'm going to have an amazing day. And I'm going to be doing so many things that are going to be enjoyable and pleasurable and that I want to do. But let me make sure that today I find at least one thing I don't want to do that is positive, that I will battle to do it. Because from the 24 hours of the day, that one moment that I battle will unlock all the blessings and the light for the day. And that's the new person we want to become. The spiritual warrior who looks and awakens a desire and makes sure that I am battling consistently.
Kabbalist Rav Ashlag talks about how the light is always available, even when there is darkness. It never goes away. It never stops shining. If you think about, if you put a mask over your eyes, You see darkness, but in reality, the light is still shining right in front of you. You just can't see it. There's a filter, a filament that covers that. So the question is, how do we lift the veils of illusion that we all live under? How do we see, really see things that we can't? A good place to start is a blind spot we all have, and that is caring too much what people think, caring what they say about us, caring how they view us. You know, it used to be that we only cared about what people we loved thought, our family, our children, our friends. Now it's strangers on Instagram, people you're never going to meet. You don't even know who they are, but they said something about you. And oh my God, that's the worst thing. This is the reality that we're living in. And it creeps into all kinds of places, workplaces, everywhere, really. So I want to read to you, this is a poem actually that Karen, your mother, loved. It's called The Guest House. This being human is a guest house. Every morning, a new arrival, a joy, a depression, a meanness. Some momentary awareness comes as an unexpected visitor. Welcome and entertain them all, even if they're a crowd of sorrows who violently sweep your house, empty of its furniture, still treat each guest honorably. He may be clearing you out for some new delight. The dark thought, the shame, the malice, meet them at the door laughing and invite them in. Be grateful for whoever comes because each has been sent as a guide from beyond. So it reminds me of a story a few years ago, about 3 years ago. My son, my oldest son, David, was at an outdoor shopping mall in Los Angeles, and this medium psychic approached him with a note. Just saw him from afar and handed him this paper. And David was weary, and he was like, I don't know what this is. And on it, he wrote the name of the girl that he was dating and her age. So that obviously got his attention. And he started to tell him all kinds of things about his work and his business and about this relationship. And then for whatever reason, he turned his focus on me. And he said, which is like a theme of my life. And he said, your mom, she's really special. She's helping people. But she used to have a bit of an ego. And at first when David was telling me, I thought he said, it sounds like she used to be a little bit evil. I thought, oh, that doesn't sound like me. Which incarnation was it? When was it? I started to unpack that. Like, when did that happen? And then I said, wait, what, evil? He said, no, ego. I said, oh. And the interesting thing about me is after all these years of training, I don't take it personally. I get really curious. And I started to think about it. And I was open to what the message could be for me. So I started to rack my brain. He said, it's not now, it was years ago. But that was there. If I rewound my life in the last couple of years, really, I wouldn't have explained it that way. I was at the end of receiving a lot of judgment, being bullied, being attacked for different things. And when I started to ask the question, okay, where was the ego? I realized that even though I was hurt, and even though the things that people did to me were wrong, I realized that my response in shutting down and protecting myself and guarding my heart so I wouldn't hurt anymore was an ego response. It was a lot of ego because it lasted for a long time. It was like 20 years of this experience. And I never looked at it like that. I looked at it as this isn't fair and it wasn't. This isn't right and it wasn't. This isn't nice and it wasn't. I never looked at it as what is my response? When I changed the lens, right? Of course, there's a Buddhist saying that says ego is like dust in your eyes. When ego is there, you simply cannot see. And so the ego response was, this isn't right. It's not fair. I don't deserve this. And all of that is true. The soul response was, what is the opportunity? Why is this in my movie? What can I learn from it? And from that, tremendous growth happened. I started to be a person that didn't rely on outside validation or approval, that I didn't care what people said. And it was work. It was a lot of work. But after so many years of experiencing that same reality, you must ask yourself, why is this in my movie? Really, why is this in my reality? If not, you're just going to suffer and you're going to blame and you're going to hurt and you're not going to grow. There'll be no changing of nature. There'll be lots of ego, all the things we spoke about until now. And so when I chose in the moment, I realized it was an ego response, by the way. I chose that if this is happening so much, so often, so frequently by so many people, what am I meant to learn? So I had two choices. Either I'm a bad person and they're right, or I have something really important to do in this world. And by people rejecting me is for me to choose myself and really step into my own. But again, the ego responds, and it's very confusing because I didn't realize that me protecting myself was also ego. Who knows the story of the Harold and the Purple Crayon? I think it's a movie now too. Abigail, my youngest, wanted me to say it's a great movie. I haven't watched it, but anyway, it's a book. And it's about Harold, and he has a purple crayon, and he draws his reality. It's a clean canvas, blank pages, and he has one little purple crayon, and he draws a line. And then he decides to go for a walk in the night, so he draws a moon, and there's a moon. And then he wants to go further in the day, so he draws a path. And then he finds water, so he draws himself a boat. And then he's hungry, and he draws himself a purple pie. How nice, right? I want a purple crayon. And I draw all the things that I want. And we can, but we don't really have blank pages, right? We are a sum of our past experiences, of our hurt, of our pain, of our ego response. But still, we have a slate of our mind, of our thoughts, and the reality that we want to create. So if you navigate, again, I'm going to emphasize these 12 days, but really it's for life. If you decide what you want to create, what story you want to rewrite, what you want to rewrite, that's all within your power to do so. But often we think that we can't change our story, that it's written in stone and we are a sum of the past. We were hurt by our family. We should have had this different experience. We should have had a different childhood or a different marriage or a different relationship. And oh, well, my life, that's it. It's sealed. It's written. It's done. But I'm telling you, with every fiber of my being, with experience, actually, every single thing, every dead end, every no, every rejection, every hurt, every time I was bullied, what was it? It was an opportunity to take out a crayon and rewrite a new path, a new narrative, a new reality. You can do it and you're meant to do it. And honestly, if I can say wholeheartedly, I meet so many people and I hear their pain and I hear their struggle. I hear their desire for wanting a good life, a happy life. And the only thing that gets in our way is that we have an inability to rewrite the story. Rewrite your story. Rewrite it again and again, many times in one day. Rip up the pages, start a new book. You have endless, endless, endless content, endless slates, endless pages. You just have to know it. I can't tell you enough. And I feel like the only reason the creator gave me a voice, because by the way, part of that whole experience of the story that I had written was that I can't speak. I'm not a public speaker. Nobody's going to hear what I have to say. When I removed them from the equation and I really spoke from heart, this is what came out. I want all of you to live your best life. I want all of you to rewrite your story. I want you to take whatever color is going to be purple, take 3,000 different colors, take every hue of the rainbow and write the story that you want. But no more blame, no more shame, no more guilt. No more, this is my past life. This is the child that I had. This is my current reality. Change your story. You can and you're meant to. And this we start tonight.
So I shouldn't say anything after what you just said, but as Monica was talking about, you know, that purple crayon, that superpower that is available to us to rewrite our story, there's one fundamental Kabbalistic teaching that if you've been studying Kabbalah for some time, you've heard it before, but I can almost guarantee that none of us are using this superpower, this powerful tool, often enough and transforming our lives with it powerfully enough. Rav Ashlag, the founder of the center, when he was talking to his students, he used an example. He says, you know, things happen in life that don't make sense to us. Why did this person do this? Why did this have to happen to me? And usually the ego mind, its job, and by the way, this is a whole other conversation, but you know, science tells us that we do not see the world. Our mind makes up an approximation of what it believes a story can be made up. It's kind of crazy, but this is where science is today. So the Kabbalists have been saying for thousands of years that what we're looking at and experiencing is an illusion. Science is there as well. That our mind tells us a story that is an approximation maybe of what is happening outside. The illusion is strong. And the biggest illusion is this. I need to understand right now why this is happening, whatever this is. he uses the example, he said, he told the students, said, you know, something says holes in the wall. Holes in the wall are those moments that aren't making sense to us, that are upsetting us, that are bothering us, the thing that is happening that I don't want to happen. He says, don't fix the holes. Leave them. Because only by leaving them and awakening what we call certainty, and we'll talk about that in a moment, can the true blessing shine to you. What is the superpower that you have? And this, again, is maybe the most powerful spiritual tool that we all probably know and almost never use enough. When something happens that I don't want to happen, when something is going on that I would rather not be going on, I stop and I say, this is from the light of the Creator, and it is certainly for my benefit. And you do it for the small things, and you do it for the big things, and you do it 10 times a day, and you do it 100 times a day. Only if this becomes a consistent consciousness and tool that you use throughout your day will you be able to experience the great light that is all around you that you're meant to be experiencing. So this tool is so important. The next 24 hours, next 12 days, really the next month, the Kabbalists teach, one of my favorite sections in the Zohar is, what is the ultimate purpose of the study of Kabbalah? What is the ultimate purpose of the tools? One thing. A true Kabbalist, the Zohar says, has the power to transform merira lemitka in Aramaic from all bitterness into sweetness, chashucha lenehova, darkness into light. Each one of us has that superpower. But the only tool that will get us there is this tool of certainty, but that is used. Again, so I always get concerned when we share things that we might have heard before. We're not doing it right. By the way, if you're not able to transform every moment of bitterness into sweetness, you're not doing it right. If you're not able to transform every moment of darkness into light, you're not doing it right yet. Consistently. You get stuck in traffic. This is from the light of the Creator and it's for my benefit. You're friend told you something nasty. This is from the light of the Creator and it's for my benefit. I'm going through this challenge that I really don't want to go through. It's from the light of the Creator, it's for my benefit. And the only way, this has to become a second nature to be able to truly gain that superpower. But ultimately, this is why we're here. This might be, again, maybe it's a lofty goal, but this is the goal. You and I and each one of us, certainly those of us who are studying this wisdom, it's for one purpose. It's to have the ability to transform bitterness into sweetness and darkness into light. But the only way to develop that superpower is by consistently, and I mean consistently, ask yourself today, again, I would challenge anybody who's heard this before, did you do this 20 times today? Stop at a moment you didn't like, at a situation you didn't want, and say, this is from the light of the Creator, it's for my benefit. This is from the light of the Creator, it's for my benefit. And the Kabbalists guarantee, the Zohar gives us this promise. If you truly take this tool and use it consistently every single day in all situations that you do not want, from the smallest to the greatest, you will slowly but surely gain the power to be a true Kabbalist, to be an individual who can go through this world and for themselves and for others, transform dark bitterness into sweetness and darkness into light. This is the new being that we need to and are meant to become on this night of renewal. This is what I am asking for, and I hope we're all asking for this. But again, as we said, we have to be using this tool, and it needs to become second nature in order to truly be able to become that powerful being as we're meant to be, that can transform all bitterness into sweetness, all darkness into light.